G3. The Model of Being and Its Universal Laws. Number 2A.
Yesterday I was trying to introduce the concept of the old science and then the transitional stage to the new science. I like to do that and bring out the various criteria for the old and new science, because you will find out that if you investigate your own way of thinking, that you will find that we are educated and were educated in the old science, and that is, so to say, written into our consciousness that we can hardly put it out again, but we have to do it. And the very first step that we can do and make is naturally to become aware that the old science is not really the best science, and that we have to get rid of it. So that is why I explained in short the old science and the most important points that constitute the old science. We have seen in the old science that really mind, small m, was always considered either as something separate from or opposite to matter. Other philosophies were then thinking that mind is just an offshoot of matter, the product of matter, which they at that time couldn't explain, but were sure that later centuries would be able to explain how matter produces mind. But most of all, we could see that in the old science, the observer should not play a role in it, that everything that was subjective in the science would be considered as non-scientific, as unscientific. So the scientist could be a good or bad man as long as he was investigating the object that he was interested in a very objective and not in a subjective way. That matter was considered to be the basis of the world, the building blocks of the world, and so they would think that through analysis, through analyzing matter to its final building blocks, to the smallest element, would therefore solve all the questions in the world. Then we have seen that this was really that which they have done, and which on one side has brought forth enormous success in the material sciences, that the life sciences have then adopted really the method of the material science to their living objects, which was a mistake of the greatest magnitude, because taking one method that is adapted to one field and use it in a completely different field is unscientific in the first degree. So today we have the repercussions of the old science, and we reap now the fruits of the last 300 centuries of a false sense of science, and we are at the position that everybody knows, where we face a world that is upside down, that does not make sense anymore, that poses questions that we don't seem to be able to solve. We are able to solve these questions, and on this point today, over the last 10 years, everybody agrees in the world now that it is a matter of consciousness and not so much a matter of reality itself, but it's a matter of how we look at reality. So that now more and more the thinkers of today are bringing up the question, what kind of consciousness should we have in order that we see reality, which is admitted to be ordered in its basic sense, how to see that world so that it is a world that will bring us peace and harmony and not all that trouble that we are going through today. So we have seen also yesterday that in the 20th century we had the beginning or a transitional stage in the field of sciences where the old science is being questioned and little by little to be overturned. That with the advent of the theory of special relativity in 1905 with Einstein, the old concept of science was shaken. He saw that the observer plays an important part in science. So suddenly the subjective view has entered as an element, as a factor in the scientific analysis. Then with the quantum mechanics of Heisenberg, 20 years later, even more so, the standpoint of the observer became most important because the observer is the one that with his mind defines what kind of experiment he's going to do, and according to that decision he will find two different results. He can look at matter and see that matter either according to his way of experimenting it as either as small particles or as waves of probability. Two very different things, two very different worlds. So again, showing the fundamental proposition that Mrs. Eddy has put forward 100 years ago, that consciousness determines the kind of world we have and we live in. So the focal point shifted from the object to the subject to consciousness. Now, as we have seen also yesterday, that the newest discovery in the field of neurophysics or neurophysiology and surgery has shown that mind is actually independent of the brain, is an independent it, and therefore is not limited, has no limitations through matter. If something is unlimited, then it is not subject to death, and so suddenly something very new has been broken into consciousness, namely that there is a world that is unlimited, therefore that can know the past, the present, the future, because it is timeless, it is spaceless, therefore can know that which is near and that which is far away, and so begins to show that we would have now a threshold over which we can enter a completely new realm, a realm that has no limits of time and space, and therefore where what was called paranormal phenomena may become very normal. It is just a question that we would also devote some centuries to the discovery of this field of mind, and that reminds us of Mrs. Eddy, that she said, well, it will take centuries in order to understand Christian Science. It doesn't take just a few days or a week or attending a class or so on to understand her subject. It is a question that will take centuries. One century has already passed, and we can see how much has changed in between those 100 years, and that the whole world and also we who are investigating Christian Science in a scientific way are seeing that we need a different lens to look at reality, that we need a different grid through which we can see reality in an ordered and in a categorized way. So the new thinkers in science, that naturally the new thinkers in science is always a minority, it's perhaps only 1% or not even 1% of all the scientists in the world that are thinking in a new way, but they become more and more prominent. More and more you can read in journals, you can see on television those big scientists like Prigogine, Wheeler, Hartmann, like Chopra, if we can take him also in that category, Salk, Varela, Weizsäcker, and all these people, they all begin to see that actually science has not been directed to the real reality, that they begin to see that therefore spirit is the reality, not matter is reality. But naturally that if spirit is the reality, they also see that we have to approach the realm of spirit with adequate methods, with spiritual methods. And here is the point where they are at loss, where they just begin to feel the aim, the purpose, the object of the new investigation, but honestly say that we don't know much about it. I just want to quote now quickly two big physical scientists that are well known, that have international high standing in their field, how they pronounce this new step away from matter to the new field of spirit. I first take Max Planck as the older of the two. Max Planck, who you know was the great physical scientist right at the beginning of this century, who then was working with Einstein, Heisenberg, Bohr, and so on in the new field of physical science. He sees that reality is of the nature of spirit. Afterwards, I read you the quotes of the nature of spirit, so that there is just one nature for him, namely just the nature of spirit, that there is no opposite to spirit, no dual reality, no dualism. And little by little, we can see that we are at the threshold where we come out of the old dualistic sense of reality and look into the one nature and the only nature of spirit with its one-valued logic. Max Planck wrote in his later years, he wrote the following thing in regard to matter and spirit. He said, and I quote here from my translation from German into English, matter as such does not exist. Now this is a great statement for the old scientists. Matter as such does not exist. All matter is brought forth and exists only through a power. So we have to consider a conscious, intelligent spirit behind this power. An invisible, immortal spirit alone is true. So that suddenly now only that which is spiritual is being has the right to be called to be true. Whereas naturally the old scientists said that which is of the nature of matter, which can be observed and measured, only that is true. Now this is a terrific paradigm shift. This is a completely new consciousness that is appealed to, that only the immortal spirit is true. So that the search for truth consequently must be a search for the spirit and for the spiritual, which is Christian Science. Or I take a more modern physical scientist, Weizsäcker. Perhaps you don't know him because he's a German, but Weizsäcker today is considered as one of the foremost thinkers in Europe and on the continent. He is one of the very few physical scientist that as a young student already began to work with Heisenberg. Heisenberg brought him into physics. He wanted to study philosophy. He was the one that was working on the atom bomb in Germany, and he was also one who tried to evade that the atom bomb is being built in Germany because he could see the result of it. after the war, when he could see how devastating material science is, he turned for a while away to philosophy. And he studied philosophy and became professor for philosophy in Germany. When he began to see that philosophy wasn't really the answer, couldn't really give the answer, he turned away with his knowledge of physics and philosophy to the subject of peace research. And today is acknowledged in Europe as leading thinkers. In a recent TV show, when he was interrogated or interviewed for a whole hour, he said the following thing: "But that which physics only guesses but does not describe at all is the spirit." So let's see what he says. Physics guesses now that really reality is spiritual. But he also admits that they cannot describe it yet. He goes on and said, with spirit is not only meant the intellect. So it's not only meant mind with a small m, which is a very big step forward. Not only the intellect, but perhaps also the Holy Spirit. And it was interesting watching him before he said, perhaps also, and he stopped and paused a little bit as if he had to take courage to spell it out before a few millions of TV, TV showers, TV viewers. And he hesitated just a little bit and said, with spirit, it's not only meant the intellect, but perhaps also the Holy Spirit. This is something that physics has not taken up as a subject, as indicating this is really the subject that the thinkers, the scientists, should take up. How this is related to physics is something that later generation will know. So he put it right into the future and said, this is a big field to investigate in the future. It is also quite interesting in that interview. The interviewer asked him, well, if he had a leaning towards physics as a young boy, and he said no. He had actually a leaning towards a philosophy. And it was only Heisenberg that said to him, you know, philosophy was the subject of the 19th century. The big subject of the 20th century will be physics. And so he convinced him to turn to physics in the 1920s. And so he studied physics with Heisenberg and so on. So the interviewer asked him and said, all right, if the main subject of the 19th century was philosophy and the main subject of the 20th century is physics, what do you think will be the subject of the 21st century, which is very near? And he bluntly said, it will be spirit, the science of spirit. So you can see something is going on in the world. Always when the world is in trouble, when the individual is in trouble, when the collective is in trouble, when the world is in trouble, that is always the healthiest period you can think of. Because when trouble comes, we really begin to think deeply and begin to think out things more deeply and more earnestly, and then we always come up with new ideas. So if the world seems to be in a turmoil today, we just can be happy and say, oh, that's wonderful. Finally, the Christ can pull through. Finally, the Christ has enough power to bring the old scientists on their knees and to raise up a completely new consciousness. And as the new consciousness is never accepted willingly, the individual, the collective, and the universal is going through a crisis, and the crisis is always the big chance for a new period, for a new age to break in. So this is what these big thinkers are trying to sense and to feel, though they don't know yet the answer. Also, perhaps another further statement that he made in that connection was the following. He said, "What is matter? It is what is adequate to laws of nature." What are laws of nature? They are mathematically described laws. Can you see, he goes from matter to nature to metaphysics, to mathematical laws. Goes away from matter to the metaphysical concept. What are described mathematically laws? What is a mathematical concept? He says it is a structure, and the Greeks would have called it idea. So in a few lines, you see, he gives the line of what's going on, that the world within 100 years or so was changing its focus from solid matter to nature, then to mathematical laws, to the metaphysical concept, from the mathematical laws further, what he says is structure, and what is structure is what Plato was conceiving under the term idea. Plato's concept of idea was a structural sense of idea, not like an idea like an erratic block somehow, somewhere. It differentiated a very structured sense of a metaphysical concept. That makes one understand even better when we read in Mrs. Eddy's textbook where she says that laws of nature are laws of spirit. She doesn't say that the laws of nature are laws of matter, as we might think, because we look at nature and think it is matter, but it's only because we look through a long looking glass. If we would have the right looking glass, the right lens, the right grid, which really to contemplate reality, if we would do that, then we would see that we are not seeing a nature as matter, but that we would see nature as spirit. Well, this is a terrific transformation, and I guess the whole week will be devoted to this transformation, so that we step by step begin to realize what through revelation Mrs. Eddy has seen, what for us who are not transparent enough to have that pure revelation, that we have to go the way, the road of reason, and reason things out, and reasoning things out, we will also arrive at the same conclusion as revelation, because divine logic and revelation will coincide. The only difference is that the road of reason is a slower road and takes a bit longer. This is the old worldview and the transition to the new worldview. But now, what is actually the new worldview, the new science? I come to that next point on our list, the new worldview, the new story of science. And here I must be a bit more explicit. It will take me a bit longer than to explain the old one, which we know more or less from our own schooling. So, what is the new world view, the new science? As I've said, it is the one world. we're living in one world and we can no more solve problems in parts of the world alone, isolated. We always have to see that the world is one, and therefore every problem is a problem of the whole and not of an isolated part. So we have seen that during the first decade of this century, a transition took place away from the old concept of science to the new concept of science. How could we define the new concept of science? What is the fundamental content, the fundamental purpose, aim, or meaning of this new science? And usually they coin it as holistic. It's a holistic sense, or also sometimes you call it ecological sense, because ecology means that we contemplate the whole and not only the isolated part, that also the environment of an isolated part must be taken into consideration, and therefore the world as one world, as a holistic world, must be taken into consideration. Holistic is a term that you read nowadays in the paper, that you hear on television over and over. You can't get on without knowing that term. It's from the Greek, holos, which means whole. So instead of talking about the whole, which we can misunderstand as a whole, especially if I don't pronounce the term properly. So the whole or wholeness is just also been expressed or coined as holos or holistic. Holism was a subject that turned up quite early in this century. It turned up at the end of World War I. Those who are of my age or so may remember very well that there was a very great thinker in South Africa who was an outstanding military man, a general, who was an outstanding biologist, and who was an outstanding philosopher, called General Smuts. And he was the first one who wrote the whole book on holism. The world hasn't taken notice of it to a large extent, but today it is reread and valued as it should have been valued.